This is Audible.
Ravage, written by Ian Rob Wright, narrated by Nigel Patterson. News report, September 29, 2012. Terrorist attack suspected of killing up to 1,500 people as commercial cruise liner Spirit of Kirkpatrick sinks due to massive explosion. Joint relief efforts are underway in the Mediterranean Sea, where the tragedy occurred, by several nations, including France, Italy, UK, and Egypt. But so far, no survivors have been found. It is thought that the explosion, which caused the entire 33,000-ton vessel to sink below the waves within minutes, occurred inside the engine compartment. No group has yet come forward to claim responsibility for the attack. But owners of the doomed cruise liner, Black Remedy Corporation, have claimed that, with the stringent safety measures present on all of their public passenger ships, there is no possible cause for the disaster other than an act of terrorism. The company has previously been targeted by eco-terrorists and religious groups because of its reputation for operating unethically in the Third World and for allegations of corruption and sabotage. While the vast multinational corporation has made great efforts in the last decade to conduct its affairs to a better moral standard, it is thought that there may still be groups and individuals who wish to target it. NATO Secretary General Abel Rasmussen condemned the suspected suicide attack as despicable. Part 1. Life. Chapter 1. "The whole town is dead," said Paul, re-entering the phone shop with a bored shuffling of his feet. Nick gazed out at the shopping centre's vacant seating areas and deserted walkways, and saw that his co-worker's statement was correct. The Boots megastore directly opposite, usually teeming with customers, was devoid of a single shopper. Its typically vibrant team of staff were pottering around aimlessly, rejigging shelf displays and chatting to one another for lack of anything else to do. Likewise, the small mobile phone shop that Nick managed was also unbearably quiet. It had been more than 2 hours since the last customer stepped through the open metal shutter that fronted the store. Every minute had begun to feel like hours. "I wonder why it's so quiet," Nick mused out loud, directing the question to his colleague. "Is England playing football today or something?" Paul shrugged, shook his bald head. "Hey, I'm Sikh. I only know when there's cricket on." Nick chuckled, but still felt worried. With no customers, how on earth were they going to get any sales? He needed to earn his bonus this month to cover the deposit he'd already paid, and yet didn't really have, on a new car. "All the other shops were just as quiet as us when you checked," he asked.
"Yeah, I spoke to Chris at Game Traders and he said they haven't had a customer since 11. They've been dossing around, playing FIFA all day."
Nick's watch told him it was just after 3. The daily sales target was a nigh-on impossible feat to achieve now. Paul had set up a 2-year iPhone contract for an overweight teenager first thing that morning, but hadn't sold a thing since. Nick himself hadn't taken much more than a few quid through the tills. Nothing but credit top-ups and bill payments. "Actually, I sold that SpongeBob phone sock too. Whoop-dee-doo." Nick rubbed at the dull black stubble on his chin and stifled a yawn. "Area manager's going to have my balls in a vice if we don't get more sales on the board. What can I do, though? Can't force people to come to town and buy overpriced gadgets that they don't really need. Hell, even I can't tell the difference between the new iPhone and the last one. This is bad, though. We need to get one more sale at least." Slow days weren't uncommon in Nick's line of business, especially with a recession in full swing, but this was one of the worst footfalls he could remember. There was barely any point to being open, in fact. With the cost of electricity and wages, the store would probably be losing money just by them being there. The store's head salesman, Paul, strolled over to the laptop area and started browsing the internet. It was against company regulations to use the computers for personal use, but Nick wasn't about to be a Jobsworth just for the sake of it. He was an easygoing manager at the best of times, and today there really was nothing else for his staff to do. He let out a sigh and looked over at Paul. "Check and see if something's going on today we don't know about. Find me an excuse to give the area manager. An outbreak of plague would be ideal."
"No problem, Governor,"
Paul typed away with his gold-ringed fingers.
Just then, Chelsea rejoined them, having finished her lunch in the back. She looked at the empty shop floor and then over at Nick, before pulling a face.
I know, he said to her. If it stays like this much longer, I'll probably send you home. No point the three of us being here.
No point even one of us being here at this rate.
If it was up to him, they all would have left already. He would have closed up shop and called it a day. But head office didn't allow him to make such judgment calls. They paid him to be there 10 hours a day, and that's exactly how long they expected him to stay, whether there was any need for it or not. There was no requirement for Paul and Chelsea to suffer, though.
I think they might slip into a coma if things get any more boring.
Ah, to hell with it. I can manage things here on my own for a couple of hours.
Nick was just about to tell both Paul and Chelsea to go home when finally a customer entered the store.
Hallelujah, Nick said under his breath before prodding a member of his staff gently on the arm.
Go get him, Chels. We need to get a contract out of this guy or I'm screwed on the conference call tonight.
No sweat, said Chelsea, flicking her long blonde hair behind her back. Watch a sales ninja at work.
She swaggered over to the customer, her trademark fake smile switched on full beam. The customer didn't seem to notice her approach, though. He slumped up against the central display, where the live demo phones were lined up on painted steel pedestals. The man hunched over a Nokia smartphone so closely that he was probably smelling the lithium in the battery.
Great, Nick thought to himself. Our first customer in ours is a pisshead.
Nick decided to shadow Chelsea just in case she got into problems. The girl had a short fuse with difficult customers, and a drunk would certainly qualify as a potential trigger for her teenage temper.
Are you okay over there, sir?
Chelsea asked the man. He remained hunched over, almost like he didn't even hear her.
I said, are you okay there, mate?
Chelsea was already beginning to look irritable, and her tone had changed. She turned to Nick and shook her head. Nick eased her aside with his hand and stepped up beside the customer. It was best for a manager to deal with anyone who was going to be a problem.
Salespeople should be free to sell, managers should be free to deal with all the headaches.
Sir, you okay?
He asked politely.
I'm afraid you can't sleep it off here.
Still no response from the hunched-over man. Nick reached out a hand. He was quickly getting impatient.
Sir, I'm sorry, but you'll have to go someplace else.
The man shot upright like an uncoiling spring. He turned to Nick with swollen, bloodshot eyes. A thin strand of saliva hung pendulously from his lower lip, ready to make a break for the floor at any moment. The man's entire expression was vacant and far away.
Yikes!
Nick took a step backwards, his stomach flipping over like a wet pancake.
What the heck is wrong with you, man?
The customer swayed on his feet and groaned unintelligibly. If he'd been drinking, then he must have drunk a shitload.
I'm not feeling well, said the man.
His voice was thick, as though he had spoken with a swollen tongue.
No shit, said Paul from over by the laptops. You look rough, mate.
The groaning man wobbled for a moment, then managed to speak again.
I don't think I can make it home. Will you call my wife for me, please?
Nick found himself staring for a moment, speechless. The stink coming off the other man was foul, even worse than the sickly sight of him.
Maybe he's a diabetic or something. Don't they have a funny smell right before a coma?
Nick managed to find his voice.
Yes, of course, he said. Chelsea, will you grab my mobile, please?
Chelsea hurried over to the sales desk and procured Nick's phone for him. She handed it over gingerly, almost as if he was contagious of something merely for talking with the smelly man in the store.
What's the number for your wife? Nick asked.
The man's eyes rolled in his skull and it seemed like he might pass out for a moment. Eventually, he managed to give a reply.
It's... One moment. It's 07... 0798... 07985.
It took about a minute in total before the man gave out his full phone number. When Nick dialed it, a woman picked up on the other end and asked who was calling.
Oh, hi. This is Nick Adams. I'm calling from Touchpad, one of the phone shops in town. I have your husband here with me. I'm afraid he's not feeling very well. He needs someone to come and collect him. Would you be able to make it into town?
Nick clutched the phone tightly to his ear and listened while the woman informed him that she could be at the store in 20 minutes. The thought of having to babysit the sick man during that time wasn't something he was relishing, but what worried him even more was that the man's wife also sounded pretty sick. The voice on the other end of the phone was disorientated and thick with mucus.
"Okay,"
Nick uttered into his mobile as the conversation neared its end. He swallowed a spongy lump halfway down his throat.
See you soon."
He slid the phone into his pocket and smiled at his sickly guest, who was standing unsteadily beside him.
"Your wife is on her way. She won't be long. Perhaps you should take a seat while you wait."
"I'll make the poor sod a cuppa," said Paul, already wandering off towards the back. "Looks like he could use one."
Nick led the sick man over to the carpeted sales area where there were several places to sit. The reason that part of the floor was carpeted was to make people feel at home, relaxed, and more inclined to buy. Nick thought the theory was rubbish, but what did he know? As the sick man took a seat on one of the area's plush, cubed sofas, Nick was forced to arc his head away as malignant body odour threatened to make his eyes water. The stench seemed to drift off the other man in hot, humid waves. Nick made sure to sit on the opposite side of the desk, but even that was too close.
"Should I do anything?" Chelsea asked him.
She looked sick to her stomach and was fidgeting with her hair. Nick waved a hand at her. "Just go, Chelsea. Paul and I will be okay to hold down the fort." The young girl's shoulders loosened with relief.
"You sure, boss?"
"Yeah, just get out of here. I'll see you when you're next in." She skipped off to the staff room to get her things, while Paul returned with 3 mugs of piping hot tea. He placed them down on the desk and slid the cleanest one towards their poorly guest.
"Here you go, fella. Drink up."
"Thank you,"
the man replied weakly. He seemed to have gotten a little better since sitting down, but still looked decidedly unwell.
"I'm sorry to put you all out like this," he said. "I just felt as though I was going to pass out. I just headed into the nearest shop."
"So you're not interested in getting yourself a shiny new phone then?" Paul joked.
The man didn't laugh. His head kept falling towards the desk as if he was having trouble holding it up.
"So what's wrong with you?" Nick asked.
The man shook his head and spattered the vinyl surface of the desk with bubbling drops of spittle.
"Oh, I don't know. I've been feeling under the weather since yesterday morning. Got really bad this afternoon, though. I think I must have the flu or something."
Nick nodded.
"Yeah, probably. Might be worth getting yourself down to see the quack. People underestimate the flu and how bad it can make you feel."
The man nodded.
"Soon as my wife picks me up, I'll be heading straight to my local doctor, don't you worry."
"Your wife sounded pretty poorly too," Nick mentioned.
"She has whatever I have, but she only started feeling ill this morning. Must have caught it from me."
Nick sipped his tea and tried to ignore the smell of wet fart drifting continuously over from the other side of the table.
"Well, I hope you get well soon, buddy, because you look like death warmed up."
The man's head slumped to the desk with a thud. Paul and Nick exchanged worried glances. 15 minutes later, when his wife arrived, the man was still face down on the sales desk. His wife tottered into the shop looking almost as bad as he did. Her eyes were bulging and bloodshot, just like her husband's, but they seemed a little more lucid and less dazed. Her mousy brown hair, still kept neat in a tight ponytail, gave her the look of a woman that just soldiered on, no matter the weather.
"Hi," Nick said to her, keeping his distance.
"I'm here to take George home,"
she said before sneezing 3 times in quick succession.
Is he here?"
"Yes," Nick pointed to him, "but I think he's napping. The woman staggered towards the sales area at the back of the store. Her steps were uncoordinated and clumsy. Her husband, George, managed to lift his head and look at her as she came over to him. He seemed unable to do anything more than that, though, and remained seated. Nick shook his head.
"Wow, I really hope I don't catch what they have."
Paul headed over and placed one of his thick hands on George's shoulder.
"The missus will get you to the doctor now, fella. You'll be right as rain."
Like a thrashing animal, George snapped his teeth at Paul's hand, clamping down his jaws like a salivating pit bull. Paul yelled out, yanking his hand back and wrenching it free. He clutched it to his chest and cursed in his native Punjab.
"Haram Jada!"
George looked completely startled, as if he had no idea what he'd just done.
"Oh, I'm so sorry, I..."
"George!" his wife cried. "What the bloody hell are you playing at?" He looked tiny and afraid, a scolded man.
"I'm so sorry," he gushed at Paul. I don't know what came over me."
Paul shook his injured hand and seemed totally bewildered by what had just happened.
"No problem, fella," he said. "I'll just put it down to the fever."
Nick frowned at George's wife.
"Maybe you should get into a doctor right away."
She nodded, embarrassed, then quickly ushered her husband away, chastising him all the way out of the shop. When it was just Nick and Paul left alone in the store again, they looked at each other in confusion.
"The fuck just happened?" said Paul.
Nick shrugged.
"Hell if I know.
How's your hand?"
"Hurts like a mother. That gandu broke the skin. I probably got rabies or something."
"Then you best stay away from me. I don't want to start frothing at the mouth and biting people. That guy was a mess."
"You're telling me."
Nick shook his head and rubbed at his temples. He felt a huge headache coming on, vibrating like an approaching passenger train.
"Screw it," he said. "I've had enough of today. Let's just cash up and get out of here. I'll do the conference call at home and pretend I'm still here."
Paul nodded, rubbing at his hand and wincing.
"Sounds good to me, Governor. I'm sure things will be better tomorrow."
Nick huffed.
"They couldn't be any worse."
Chapter 2. The roads home were quiet. Nick and Paul had managed to leave work at 4:15 before the rush hour traffic was due to begin. One or two cars still dotted the lanes of the dual carriageway, and at one point he'd needed to slow down to let a rushing ambulance pass by. But for the most part he hadn't had to drop his Alfa Romeo below 70 the whole way home. By 4:50 he was parked on the curb and walking into his house. It was nice to be home a couple hours early, and as he put his key into the front door he began to think about what he could do with the extra time. Perhaps he would take Deanna and James out for a nice meal someplace. It had been a while since they'd treated themselves, and it would be a nice way to put the dreary and exhausting day behind him. Maybe he would forget that tomorrow he would have to endure it all over again.
"And the day after that, and the day after that, and every other day, until I die of a stroke or just plain boredom."
Deanna was standing barefoot in the hallway when he stepped inside the porch. She was obviously surprised to see him home so early. "What are you doing back?" she asked, her dark Moroccan eyes suspicious beneath her choppy black fringe. "Everything okay?"
"Don't get me started," said Nick, hooking his woolen coat onto one of the porch hangers. "We had about 3 customers all day long, and then some weirdo came in and attacked Paul. He's okay, by the way, so don't worry. In the end, I decided it wasn't even worth being open, so I closed up early."
"Won't you get in trouble?"
"I couldn't care less at this point. I'll take the conference call in the bedroom later, but I'm sure no one will even know."
"You fancy going out for dinner tonight, oh dear wife of mine?"
Surprisingly, Deanna didn't seem enthused by the suggestion.
"I don't know, honey," she said. "James is feeling a bit under the weather. I don't know if it's wise taking him out, and I don't want to get a babysitter."
Nick raised an eyebrow.
"What is it with people getting sick today? I swear something must be going around. What's wrong with him?"
"He's just a little bunged up and a headache. Probably just needs an early night. He's in the living room watching Family Guy DVDs."
Nick sighed. "I told you not to let him watch that show, Deanna. It's not like The Simpsons."
"It's all right. He doesn't understand the adult jokes. Go check on him. He'll be glad to see you."
"Okay," he said, sighing in defeat of her argument.
He gave her a peck on the cheek and moved past her. He took the door on the left, which led into the living room. Inside, his mop-haired little angel lay curled up on the beige corner sofa. He was peering at the television screen, but seemed unable to focus very well. He was squinting and blinking his eyes as if something was irritating them.
"You okay, little dude? Mummy says you're not feeling very well."
"I have a headache," James said pitifully.
Nick went and sat on the end of the sofa. He pulled his son's socked feet up onto his lap.
"Oh, dear. I'll get Mummy to cook you something nice and then you can get an early night. You'll feel all better." "Do I have to go to school?"
Nick laughed and tickled his son's foot.
But James didn't react, which was strange because he was usually very sensitive to tickle torture. He must really have been feeling ill.
Nick tussled his hair instead. We'll see how you're feeling tonight, buddy, and then decide. So, what's happening in Family Guy?
Brian and Stewie are trapped inside a bank, and Brian just ate Stewie's nappy.
Nick screwed his face up in disgust.
Lovely.
Well, you can carry on watching until dinner, but then it's going off, okay? He was about to get back up again to go find Deanna, but he paused when he spotted the thick Beano plaster on his son's finger.
Hey, buddy, what happened to your finger?
Jordan bit me at school.
I didn't even call him a name or nothing. He got in lots of trouble with Mrs. Tanner, though, so it's okay. Mummy had to kiss it better for me and put a Dennis the Menace on it.
Nick didn't like the coincidence. Paul had been bitten, too. But what did that mean? Surely an unruly child biting his son was nothing to worry about. It was the type of thing that happened at first school all the time. Still, it was weird.
Jordan bit you. Were you feeling ill before that or afterwards?
James shook his head.
I didn't feel poorly until Mummy picked me up. I started to feel sick in the car and got a headache.
Nick patted his son on the leg and gave him the reassuring smile of a worried parent.
Okay, he said. You just rest here and I'll call you when dinner is ready. Anything in particular you'd like?
Fish fingers.
Anything else?
Fish fingers.
Okay, fish fingers it is.
Nick got up from the sofa and headed out into the hallway. Deanna was in the kitchen, already starting on dinner. His lord requires fish fingers, he said to her, as he approached from behind and squeezed at her hips.
Righto, she said.
She was already rummaging around the fridge freezer, so it was easy for her to come out with a large cardboard box full of cod sticks. She set them down on the IKEA breakfast table, next to a basket of laundry, and brushed off a layer of frost.
Did he ask for anything else, or just fish fingers?
Just fish fingers, with a side of fish fingers. I suppose you could force him to accept some chips and beans with them.
That wouldn't be because you want chips and beans, would it? You got fillet steak in the fridge, you numpty.
I know, I have. He perched back against the table. But I'm too tired to eat it tonight. It would just be wasted on me. I'll have whatever James is having. Deanna moved up close to him, tiptoed on the tiles and gave him a kiss on the mouth.
You're not coming down with something as well, are you, babe? Because I can't be doing with nursing you both back to health. I'm in no mood for man flu.
Nick shook his head.
I'm fine, just tired. Really, really, really tired. I don't know how much longer I can take working at that bloody place.
Well, find something else then. I don't want you to be miserable all the time.
I'm not miserable, just unfulfilled.
Anyway, don't worry about it for now. I'm just glad to be home early for a change. Shame we can't go out, but never mind. James show you his battle wound? Deanna asked him.
His finger?
Yeah.
What happened?
Another kid bit him about an hour before I picked him up. It wasn't too bad. Still bleeding a little when he got home, so I put a new plaster on it.
And kissed it better?
Of course. What kind of mother do you think I am? Nick giggled and then checked his watch. It was almost 5:30. I need to get ready for the conference call, he said, giving his wife a quick peck on the lips. I'll try to get away as quick as I can.
Okay, I'll bring you a coffee up.
He thanked her and then quickly headed upstairs to use the phone in the bedroom where it would be quieter. The last thing he needed was to be on the conference call and have his son and wife's voices giving it away that he was at home instead of at the store where he was supposed to be. He opened the door to the bedroom and lay himself down on the freshly made queen-size bed, dumping down his keys and wallet on the glass side table next to the phone. The duvet cover was the blue Egyptian cotton one that he liked so much. The soft thread immediately relaxed him. The conference call would commence at 5:30 sharp, but the managers of the other stores would usually get on early to check the lay of the land. How did your store do today? What was football like? Did you meet your insurance quota? Is the area manager in a good or bad mood today? He picked up the phone and dialed in the number he knew by heart. Then he tapped in the login PIN number. There was a brief silence while the automated service connected him. When he heard the static of the open line, Nick introduced himself. Nick Adams, Solihull, Touchwood. There were no replies. He must have been the first one there. Great, he thought to himself. Everyone else has had such busy days that they're struggling to even get away and jump on the call.
I'm so dead.
Nick took a deep breath and released it slowly, letting it echo in the receiver. He rubbed at his forehead with his free hand and closed his eyes while he waited for someone else to arrive. He really hated conference calls. Why there had to be one every single evening, he did not know. Just like he did not know why he had to be in store for 8 a.m. when it only took 20 minutes to get ready for a 9 a.m. opening. It seemed that head office was unaware that branch managers had lives outside of work. There was nothing he could do, though. He wouldn't get paid as much anywhere else in retail. Most people in the country, the world in fact, hated their jobs just as much as he did, but for less pay. So in some ways he was lucky. At least his family was secure, even if it did mean he was miserable 50 hours a week. Nick checked his watch and saw that it was now 5:32. "Hello," he said into the receiver. "Hello, is anyone else here?" A second later, the line crackled and another voice appeared on the line. "Hey," said Nick, "who's that?"
"It's Paul."
"Paul? What are you doing on the call?"
"I figured you'd need backup after the day we had."
Nick smiled. It was good of Paul to go down in flames with him. "Thanks, man, I appreciate it. Just me and you so far, though."
"Yeah, I think there are a couple managers who are reluctant to get on here. I phoned around on the way home and found out that a few other stores were deserted as well. Evesham only did 2 contracts and Tewkesbury did none, so don't worry too much."
Nick sighed relief. "Well, that's good to know. Least I won't be the only one getting torn a new one." Paul started coughing and hacking into the phone. "You okay, buddy?"
"Just a cold coming on, I think. Probably from that doody that bit me earlier."
"You best not be calling in sick on me tomorrow, dude."
"Course not. Can't leave all the sales to Chelsea, can I? There's only room for one top salesman in our store, and it's me."
A crackle on the line and another voice appeared. It was the distinctive Australian twang of the area manager. It grated at Nick's nerves every time he heard it. It wasn't the accent he hated, it was the man.
"Who is on the call?"
the area manager asked in his usual pissy tone. "Just me and Paul," answered Nick.
"And who might me and Paul be?"
"Nick Adams and Paul Patel from Solihull. No one else is on the call yet."
"Yes, I know."
The area manager spoke as if he were a fool.
"I've had a lot of managers call in sick today, so there will be no call tonight."
The line clicked and the area manager was gone.
"Prick," said Paul.
Nick laughed into the line. "I'd wet myself if he hadn't actually gone yet." Paul tutted.
"Guy, don't scare me."
"You find it weird?" asked Nick. "I mean, what he said."
"About managers calling in sick? I guess so. Maybe they all went on a bender and planned a mass sickie. You know we're never in the loop about those things, just because we're both married and past the age of 30. This is a young man's game, fella."
"Yeah, maybe. I just find it weird with how town was so quiet today. And that guy who came in at the end of the day was a total mess. There must be a right horrible bug going around."
"Yeah, the bloody lurgy, and I have it,"
said Paul, before clearing his throat of phlegm.
"I gotta go, Governor. Think a night in the pub is in order if I'm going to be feeling rough all night."
Nick rolled his eyes. "Just don't come in with a hangover."
"Ha! I'm sick! We don't get drunk. There's no beer in the world strong enough."
Nick laughed and both men exited the call. He went downstairs to spend the evening with his family, hoping that whatever was going around, he wouldn't catch it.
Chapter 3 The evening had gone by quickly. A dinner of fish fingers, followed by a few hours of innocuous reality television, and it was soon everybody's bedtime. Nick had intended to put James to bed right after dinner, but ended up changing his mind. He had become so feverish and fitful that Nick decided to let him stay up, just so he could keep an eye on him. Deanna had started to feel grim too. She'd spent the evening reaching for the tissue box every few minutes. By the end of the night, the living room had started to feel more like an infirmary than a place to relax. Nick assumed it was only a matter of time before he succumbed to the dreaded lurgy himself. Just after 10 o'clock, Deanna had carried James upstairs. He remained asleep in her arms, and then joined Nick in bed a few minutes later. She took a handful of flu capsules from the bedside drawer and dry-swallowed them with a brief gagging sound. Then she dragged herself into her no-sex frumpy pyjamas and was snoring loudly before even 10 minutes had passed. Nick had then been left staring at the ceiling and struggling to find sleep himself. He was dreading another workday like the one he'd just had. The minutes had seemed like hours, and the stress of not meeting target had been constantly on his mind. He was nothing but a glorified salesman, really, but sometimes head office made his job as stressful as being a brain surgeon.
Targets for this, targets for that, working weekends, opening evenings. They expected him to live, breathe and eat the phone industry. But the truth was, he didn't give two shits about the company he worked for. It was a paycheck, nothing more, and he hated every minute he spent there. It's my life, though. Nobody else to blame. Dropping out of the University of Birmingham was perhaps his biggest mistake. His parents would certainly say so. But he had little faith that it would have resulted in anything different if he had graduated. He would still be the same unambitious dropout that he'd always been, always taking the path of least resistance. He could have been a teacher or a journalist by now, but instead he'd allowed himself to fall short and become a middle manager in retail. It was a comfortable, respectable living, but deeply unfulfilling. But it was totally his own fault. He'd always told himself that one day he would do something different, that one day he would start a career he enjoyed, but before he knew it, he was 30 years old with a wife and child. Now there was never going to be a one day. He sighed and closed his eyes, trying to ignore the beastly snores of his slumbering wife. God, he loved her, but sometimes she sounded like an asthmatic camel, especially when she was ill. He tried his best to ignore the rhythmic grumbling, to get at least a little sleep. And thankfully, before long, slumber finally approached him. When Nick opened his eyes again, the bedside LED alarm clock read 5:03 a.m., and there were noises downstairs. He glanced at Deanna, checking to see if the sounds had awoken her also, but she was silent and still, no longer even snoring. Nick rubbed at his eyes. I must have fallen asleep, finally. The noises downstairs continued, consistent and regular, almost like a rhythm. Someone was shuffling around, possibly in the kitchen. He was sure he heard the wooden chairs of the breakfast table scuffing against the granite floor tiles. God damn it! This is all I need. I have to be up in a couple hours and some git is trying to rob me. He slid out from beneath the bed covers and headed for the door in his boxer shorts. The noises continued, almost as if whoever was downstairs didn't even care if they were heard. If it was indeed a burglar, then he was the most negligent criminal ever. Or someone who just doesn't give a fuck. The thought filled Nick with dread. What if the person downstairs was a lunatic, ready to hack him up into bloody cutlets? Stop being stupid. You're just freaking yourself out. He crept barefoot across the landing, wishing he had a baseball bat or some other weapon stashed upstairs, but it had never occurred to him before now to need such things. He'd never worried about being burgled. So much for living in a nice area. He started down the carpeted steps at the end of the landing and made sure to take each one carefully. The darkness of the downstairs hallway seemed to shift and swirl before him, almost as if it was warning him away. He had to remind himself that it was just his eyes adjusting to the lack of light. He reached the bottom step and padded into the hallway. From there, it became clear that the stranger in his home was indeed inside the kitchen. Not only could Nick hear them shuffling around in there, but he could also see a hint of light coming from beneath the door at the end of the hallway. What the hell are they playing at? Do they want me to catch them? Nick started to plan his actions. Was he just going to burst in, wearing nothing but his boxer shorts, hoping to frighten the intruder away? Would that even work? What if the intruder was armed? He decided that he would rather prevent a confrontation than create one, so he decided to give the burglar a chance to flee. He rapped his knuckles against the kitchen door as hard as he could, and spoke in his sternest voice.
Hey, whoever you are, get the hell out of my house! Right now!
Silence.
I've already called the police, so just get out of here!
Silence. I knew it. There's a loon in my kitchen. What am I going to do? Nick didn't know what to do. Opening the door and stepping inside the kitchen was probably the stupidest thing, but it was what he found himself doing anyway. Despite his fear, Nick was angry that someone felt they could root around in his kitchen in the middle of the night. He pushed open the door, ready for action. The kitchen was dark. The light he had seen creeping beneath the door was coming from the open fridge freezer. In front of the glowing appliance stood the intruder. Their body was a featureless silhouette against the backdrop of frozen ready meals and French fries.
Hey, said Nick. What the hell are you playing at? Get the fuck out of my house!
No answer. Not even a reaction.
As his eyesight continued to adjust, Nick could see that the figure was facing away from him, peering into the fridge freezer. But slowly, gradually, the stranger was beginning to turn around. They were small, too small to be an adult. Nick's breath caught in his chest. What the? He stared at his son with shock. James? What are you doing, Dad? His words trailed off as he saw what his son was doing. Hanging from James's tiny mouth was a large hunk of fillet steak, still raw and dripping. Jesus. Nick didn't understand what he was looking at. What was James doing down here in the middle of the night, tearing into raw meat like a feral dog? He doesn't know what he's doing. He's not well. Nick raised a hand toward his son. James, put the meat down. It will make your tummy bad. James lowered his head, animal eyes trained on his father. His thin lips trembled in a snarl. And then, with what sounded like a growl, James lunged at Nick. His delicate hands were outstretched like cat claws. His sallow, naked chest was soaked with the blood of the dripping steak. As James collided with Nick, the hunk of meat fell from his mouth and hit the tiles with a splat. Nick wrapped his arms around his son and spun him around. From behind, he wrestled to keep his thrashing child under control. James! James! What has gotten into you? It's your father! You have a fever and you need to calm down. James continued to thrash and was now letting out a high-pitched scream like an old-fashioned kettle. The noise forced its way into Nick's head and made his skull throb. Calm down! He yelled at his son. Just stop fighting me! But it was no good. James continued to screech and yell, clawing and punching, fighting to get free of Nick's restraining arms. His blood-stained milk teeth snapped wildly at the air. Nick assumed his son was hallucinating from fever. If he could just get to the light switch and illuminate the room, perhaps James would be less confused. Maybe then he would calm down. He squeezed his arms tight around his son's waist and began to sidestep towards the light switch. James's relentless thrashing made every step a battle of will and determination. He did not understand how his young son could suddenly become so strong and wild. What has gotten into him? He's like a feral cat. I can't believe... Nick's bare foot came down on something soft and slippery. He quickly realized that it was the raw fillet steak, dropped from his son's jaws. But it was too late to react in time. Nick's leg went out from under him as his foot slipped on the wet meat. He fell sideways, with the full weight of his son still in his grasping arms. His head hit the tiles with a crack, and a galaxy of stars burst through his vision. There was also another sound, a sound that was both meaty and wet. He was too dazed to sit up. His vision spun, and a roiling wave of sickness crashed against the rocks of his stomach. So he just lay there for a while, totally confused by what was happening. Am I missing something? Because all this seems a little crazy to me. After a few stretched-out seconds, Nick finally pushed himself up onto his elbows and glanced around. James was lying nearby, his small body unmoving.
Oh, Jesus!
He scurried across the tiles on his hands and knees. He placed a hand behind James's head and tried to lift it up, but withdrew his fingers when they touched something hot and tacky. Even in the dim light provided by the open fridge, Nick could see the dark blood on his hands. It was warm and sticky, like drying glue.
No! No! No!
Nick looked to his left and saw the matted clump of hair that covered the sharp corner of one of the kitchen's wooden chairs. As he had fallen, he had taken his son down with him, smashing his young skull against the unforgiving furniture. Nick shot to his feet and leapt for the light switch.
Oh my God! James! James! No! I'm sorry! No! Oh, help me! Somebody help!
He flicked on the lights, flooding the kitchen with an artificial glow that stopped just short of the darkness outside the windows. He dropped back down to his knees and placed his hands either side of James's face. Blood pooled on the tiles, and his son's staring eyes were glazed and puffy. He felt for a pulse, but there was none. His son was not breathing.
He can't be dead. No!
Nick slunk backwards on the tiles, his mind skewing at the edges and threatening to shatter into a thousand frantic pieces.
God help me, what have I done? I've killed my own son! I've killed my own son! No, No, no. He's not dead. He can't be. I just need to get help. That's all.
Nick leapt up off the floor, so panicked that he almost took flight. For a brief moment, his mind was blank, numb with panic. But then he got moving, sprinting into the hallway and leaping up the stairs. He could use the phone beside the bed and wake up Deanna at the same time. She could go and check on James while he spoke to the emergency services.
And tell them what I've done.
He burst into the bedroom, shouting at the top of his lungs for his wife to wake up. Her body shifted beneath the sheets, but she didn't respond. Nick cursed under his breath and grabbed for the phone. He dialed 999 and waited. And waited. In his ear.
Emergency services are currently dealing with a very high number of calls. Please leave your name, address and situation, and help will arrive with you shortly. Please remain calm while waiting for assistance. Leave your details after the beep. Beep!
Nick couldn't believe what he was hearing. 999 were too busy to answer his call. What is going on? He turned to Deanna and knelt on the bed, shoving her hard with both hands.
Deanna, wake up! I need your help! Something terrible has happened!
She began to stir.
Finally! She'll know what to do.
With a low moan, Deanna rolled out of bed and placed both feet on the carpet with a soft thump. Then she began to straighten up. Nick switched on the bedside lamp and started redialing 999. He looked up at his wife as he did so.
Deanna! James is hurt! He was in the kitchen and I...
Deanna's glaring eyes were wide, the lower lids hanging slack while bloodshot orbs rattled around their sockets. A slick trail of blood covered her chin, and trickles of fluid sweated from her nipples beneath her nightshirt. Nick's jaw dropped open as he tried to understand what he was seeing. But before he had a chance to think, Deanna leapt across the bed at him. He dodged sideways, just in time, and stumbled against the end of the bed. He almost fell down, but managed to remain on his feet.
Deanna, what are you doing?
He shouted. She clambered over the bed towards him, leaving bloody handprints on the Egyptian sheets and snarling at him like a wolf. Nick edged backwards against the wall. Deanna glared at him balefully, her jaws grinding back and forth like saw blades. Then she let out a high-pitched screech and pounced. Nick put his arms out to defend himself and managed to shove Deanna off balance as she landed. She stumbled sideways and tripped, colliding with the mahogany chest of drawers that her mother had bought them both as a wedding gift, the one he'd always hated. Instinctively, he went to help his wife, mortified that he might have hurt her, but Deanna was right back on her feet. This time he ran away from her. It was the only thing he could think to do. Deanna seemed dead set on hurting him, and he knew in his heart that he could never intentionally injure her, not even in self-defense. His only option was to get the hell away from her until she got a hold of herself. He rushed out of the bedroom and slammed the door closed behind him. Deanna crashed against the other side, shaking the wood on its hinges. She banged her fists against it and let out another ear-piercing shriek. Nick didn't know why she didn't just use the door handle and continue coming after him, but he wasn't about to complain about her lack of common sense. He used the opportunity to flee. He needed to get help. Call 999 again and again until someone finally answered him, but he couldn't afford to just wait around for them to pick up the phone. His son and wife needed help right this instant.
It might already be too late for James. Jesus, save me!
Deanna continued battering the bedroom door. All Nick could do to get away from the torturous sound was to go downstairs. He reached the ground floor hallway and realized he was naked but for his boxer shorts. Bloodstains covered his chest in murky smears. He headed through the kitchen, pausing at the threshold as he saw the body of his son lying on the tiles.
I'm in hell. This is the abyss.
Looking down at James's tiny body, Nick knew that his son was dead. No ambulance or doctor would change that.
This can't be happening.
He stumbled over to the kitchen sink and immediately vomited. Mashed up fish fingers and undigested baked beans. He twisted on the taps and watched the mess rinse into the plug hole. Then he splashed the cold water onto his face and chest, wiping away some of the blood. By the time he was finished, he was freezing and numb. I need to put some clothes on, he said out loud. Hearing his own voice calmed him slightly, made him feel a little more in control of the situation. Deanna was still banging on the door upstairs and screeching like a banshee. There was no chance he was going to go into the bedroom to get clothes, so instead he headed across the kitchen. He rummaged through the laundry basket on the breakfast table and pulled out a crinkled grey T-shirt and a pair of jeans. He threw them on quickly, along with a pair of mismatched socks. Then he began to sob, and then wail, and then scream. He didn't allow himself the luxury of crying for much more than a couple of minutes. He could not condone sitting there and weeping while his son lay dead at his feet and his wife was upstairs, flinging herself against the bedroom door like a mental patient.
I need to help her.
He had to get out of the house. It seemed like the only way to ensure help came was to go out and find it. James was dead, but Deanna was not. She needed a doctor. He got up and left the kitchen behind him, entering into the hallway. As he did so, an almighty crash came from the bedroom. He stopped at the bottom of the staircase in the hallway, staring up at the landing. Deanna appeared at the top, half naked and snarling.
Deanna, just stay right where you are, okay?
She hurtled down the steps towards him. Nick wasted no time in sprinting inside the front porch and slamming the double-glazed interior door behind him. Deanna's face immediately smashed up against the glass panel, splitting the delicate flesh of her tanned cheeks and smearing blood everywhere. Nick was confident the PVC door would hold against the onslaught, but seeing his wife's mangled face through the glass was more than he could bear. He slid his feet into the first pair of trainers he could find and pulled his long woolen overcoat from the wall pegs. It was then that he realized the worst. His wallet was in the bedroom, and so were his car keys.
Damn it!
There was no point leaving the house without his keys. He wouldn't get anywhere without a car. But how could he get back into the bedroom without Deanna tearing him to shreds? He turned back around to face the interior door. The glass panels were soaked with bloody chunks of flesh. But Deanna was gone. Nick crept up to the glass and peered through. The hallway was dim and shadowy, but there seemed to be no sign of his wife anywhere.
Can I make it upstairs before she spots me? Maybe she's gone to the kitchen. She may have seen James's body and come to her senses.
Nick placed his hand on the door handle and began to turn it slowly. With every inch that the door opened, he paused and waited, seeing if Deanna was hiding in the hallway. He looked left. He looked right. It was all clear.
Where the hell did you go, Deanna?
He pushed open the door and slid through the gap. The end of the hallway was illuminated by light coming from the kitchen, but the stairway and the upstairs hallway were shrouded in shadow. He placed a foot on the first step and paused, listening out for any warning signs. Then he took the second step, the third, the fourth. He entered the hallway upstairs and all was still clear. Darkness seemed to close around him like a blanket. The bedroom was just up ahead, the door hanging wide open. Nick picked up his pace and hurried towards it. Out of habit, he went for the light switch as soon as he entered the room, but this time he stopped himself before pushing it.
Better to remain hidden in the dark.
He crept across the carpet and headed over to his bedside table, where he knew he had left his wallet and keys. Sure enough, even in the dark, he found them. He picked them up and shoved them into his coat pocket.
That went easier than expected.
Nick turned around to leave. Deanna was right in front of him. His wife was standing so close that he could smell her fetid saliva. Her hands immediately went for his throat, choking him with a strength he didn't know she possessed. He tried to fight her off, to force her backwards as she tried to bite at his face, but she was unrelenting. Each snap of her jaws sent hot dribbles of bloody phlegm down his neck. His vision began to crackle with spots and stars, as his oxygen supply was suddenly cut off. He twisted in the vice-like grip of her hands and lifted up his knee to create space between them. Just when he was sure he was about to lose consciousness, Nick threaded both of his arms between his wife's elbows and forced them out and away from him. He succeeded in breaking Deanna's hold, but the sudden intake of desperate breath left him momentarily paralyzed. Deanna was back on him before he even had a chance to move. All Nick had time to do was deliver a swift kick that caught his wife just above the knees. She fell to the floor, snarling. He took his chance and made a run for it. Heading down the corridor at full pelt, Nick could hear his crazed wife right behind him, chasing him down like a predator.
He took the steps downwards, three at a time, half running, half tumbling. Deanna gained on him as she leapt down the stairs behind him without any fear for her own safety. She collided with him at the bottom, clinging to his shoulders like a piggybacking child. Nick felt her teeth clamp down and grab a hold of him. He anticipated the sharp burn of his skin being shorn away, but was relieved to find that Deanna had only sunk her teeth into the thick woolen collar of his coat. He barreled into the wall, crushing Deanna like the meat in a sandwich. Her jaws tore loose from his collar, and he was suddenly free of her weight. He made for the porch again, so quickly that his foot struck the lip of the doorway and he went crashing to the stone floor. Wind knocked out of him, Nick looked up to see Deanna coming at him like a hungry vulture. She let out another one of those high-pitched screeches and leapt into the porch. Nick kicked out with both legs, catching her in the stomach and forcing her back into the hallway. Before Deanna had chance to regain her balance and come at him again, he leapt up and slammed the porch's interior door shut. Just like before, Deanna crashed into the other side and shoved her face up against the glass, snarling like a demon. Nick stared back at her in horror, gasping for breath and barely recognizing the woman he had married. No longer was she his beautiful, exotic wife of 7 years. She was a flesh-craving ghoul.
"I'm sorry, my love," he said to her through the blood-smeared glass. "I'm going to find help right now. I'll sort all this out, I promise. I love you."
Nick's world was falling apart, his nightmares becoming real. He unlocked the front door to his house and stepped out into the cold, grey, approaching dawn.
Chapter 4. The first thing Nick noticed when he stepped out of his front door was the orange glow on the horizon. The sun was beginning its journey past the horizon, and the darkened houses of the street were slowly being coloured in by the muted pastels of dawn.
"The start of another autumn morning, on the worst day of my life."
The second thing he noticed was that the quiet cul-de-sac in which he lived was unusually active for so early in the morning. Several of his neighbours' houses were lit up, bright, their windows glowing. Silhouetted figures flitted back and forth inside, moving in and out of sight. There was also a lot of noise. Nick wasted no time in heading past his wife's compact blue Peugeot parked on the driveway and making for his own car parked on the curb. He pressed the fob on his keychain and the lights flashed, the locks disengaged. He was just about to head around to the driver's side when he heard a commotion across the road.
"Help me! Somebody, please!"
Nick glanced across the road to see a woman racing across one of the lawns. He recognized her as the middle-aged blonde that lived opposite. He'd rarely spoken to her, but he was pretty certain her name was Lara. Now she was running towards him with the looming spectre of a man, possibly her husband, close behind her. Nick stood still and watched in confusion.
"What's wrong, Lara?" he asked her once she got close enough. "Are you okay?"
But it was clear the woman was not okay. Her eyes were wide and bloated with fear. A ragged gash ruined the left side of her face. It looked like a bite mark.
My husband! He's trying to kill me! Please, you have to help me!"
Lara's husband barreled into the back of her, crushing her up against Nick's car. From across the roof of the vehicle, Nick watched in stunned silence as a domestic disturbance commenced right in front of him.
"He's bloody well going to kill her if he's not careful."
Nick had seen enough and raced around the car, ready to intervene. Lara's husband had pinned her to the floor and was clawing at her neck and face. She screamed and writhed, batting away the attacks as best she could. But it was a battle she was losing. Her husband was twice the size. Nick thrust out both his arms and managed to shove Lara's husband off her.
"What the hell are you playing at?" he demanded of the man. "You ought to be bleeding locked up."
The man came at Nick without a word, squashing him against his car. The bodywork crumpled under the impact. Nick shook his head and tried to get to grips with the situation. The man was bigger than him by about half a foot, and the extra leverage was all it took for his arms to give way. With each passing second, the crazed man managed to bring his snarling face a little bit closer.
"The nutter's trying to bite me, just like Deanna."
Nick thought about the bite mark on Lara's face and realized that her husband had obviously been the one to bite her. He looked down at her now and saw that she was scurrying away on her rump. He shouted for her to help, but she shook her head and continued backing away. Well, thanks for nothing. With no other obvious option, Nick performed for the first time in his life a headbutt. His forehead connected firmly with his attacker's nose, and something stiff cracked and became soft. But the bigger man did not release his grip. Nick's arms continued to grow weak as his attacker's jaws got closer and closer. After the headbutt, the bigger man's features had become a mashed-up canvas of blood and pus. It was then that Nick realized that whatever had taken a hold of the man's senses was the same thing that had seized Deanna and James. The man was beyond reason or retreat. The man was suffering with the same sickness as Nick's family. "Let go of me!" Nick pleaded, knowing it would do no good as his arms began to bend at the elbows. Jagged teeth snapped shut mere inches from his face. The smell of rancid breath became nauseating. But just when he expected to feel the agonizing crunch of being bitten, the weight in his arms fell away. He was once again free.
"You can't mess around with these people," someone said.
It was the cantankerous old man that lived in the detached bungalow at the end of the road, the one who was always complaining about people parking on the curb in front of his house.
"You gotta beat them down right away before they get their teeth into you."
Nick was doubled over and gasping for breath. He noticed the blood-soaked golf club clutched in the old man's gnarled fists. The wood was clumped with hair and what might have been brain matter.
You can't just cave in people's skulls like that. That man was sick. He needed our help.
"You're a naive fool. These people aren't sick. Don't you understand? They're goddamn zombie."
The elderly man lurched forward, the golf club falling from his hands and clattering on the tarmac. Nick hopped out of the way just in time to see that two more of his neighbours had appeared out of the dawn shadows. The two of them were snarling and spitting like a pair of wolves, and they took the old man down like a winded fox. Nick stepped back, unable to take his eyes off what was happening.
"How is this possible? How has everybody gone insane?"
He looked down at his elderly neighbour and saw that it was already too late to help him. The old man's throat had been torn free of his neck, and the tubular mass of his windpipe was hanging to one side like a loose tie. The two neighbours that had attacked him were now crouched over the body and doing the unthinkable.
"Christ, they're eating him!"
Nick fought to keep his stomach under control. His mind turned to action. He grabbed the driver's side door of his car and swung it open as hard as he could. It caught the nearest neighbour square in their face and sent him reeling backwards. Nick wasted no time and leapt in behind the steering wheel, slammed the door shut and engaged the central locking. Click. It was the sound of safety. His neighbours rose to their feet, discarding the remains of the old man and beating their bloody fists against the car's windows. The vehicle rocked back and forth. Nick keyed the ignition and put the engine in gear. The automatic headlights flicked on and bathed the road in their harsh glare. It was then that he saw the full scale of horror taking hold of his neighbourhood.
"This can't be real. I'm in a twisted nightmare, and any second Deanna is going to wake me up with a nice cup of tea and let me know it's time for work. This has to be a dream. This has to be."
10 feet ahead, a woman lay dead and mangled in the centre of the road, while several feet beyond her was a desperate man battling with a group of attackers. They seemed to be eating him alive, tearing chunks of flesh from his flailing arms and wrists as he wearily fought them off.
"The whole neighbourhood is under attack. It's like bloody Sarajevo."
One of the houses on Nick's right was billowing thick black smoke from some unseen fire taking hold. Muffled screams came from inside and joined the ones that were already filling the air with their collective buzz. People were fighting and dying all around him. Nick sat in his car, staring through the windscreen, frozen by what he was witnessing. There was just too much to take in. So much horror. It filled his eyes and ears. Stumbling down the road towards him was a young boy, not much older than James. He wasn't quite like the other sick people, though. He was slower and clumsier than they were, almost like he was drunk. When the boy stepped into the cone of the car's headlights, Nick saw that his intestines were hanging out.